Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Hello, filthy animals. It's Ben Vanel here dropping in once again before the episode starts to remind you we've got a live show on sale. That's right, Adam, Tommy and myself, along with potentially special guests, will be performing live at the European Beer Cafe at 4 p.m. on September the 15th. So get your tickets at filthycasuals.com.au or check our socials for links to those tickets, and we'll see you there.
Morning, video games. Welcome to another edition of Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and knowledgeable boys. Thank you for joining us.
You've said it 150 times.
I know. I don't know why. I stumbled once and then I was like, they haven't noticed this. I've gotten away with it. And then, blow me down, I stumbled again.
Yeah.
What is this show? Not only that, we literally just recorded an episode right before this. So if anything, that should have been practice. I'm in red hot form. I'm out of the batting cages and now I'm here introducing this episode. Mm. Thank you for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo and sitting opposite me...
Hello, filthy animals. It's Ben Vanel here. I have memorized my introduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else I've memorized? The name of our third co-host.
That's my impression of you. You did fine.
And
you
covered it very well.
That was more Porky Pig. And from now on, your nickname on the show and in real life is Porky Pig.
I'm fine with that. I don't need to wear pants anymore.
Oh, very
You're
going
to have to get yourself a little waistcoat or whatever the fuck he wore.
Yeah. Bow tie.
I'd have to think of two words that mean the same thing every time I want to end a sentence, because that's what he always does is...
The misdirection.
You know who Porky Pig is.
He's not far off being a bit steampunk old Porky Pig, is he?
What?
Because he's got the little waistcoaty thing. He's got the little bow tie.
That's not steampunk.
Yeah, it is. He could have a little fob watch in that little coat of his.
Nah, that's not steampunk. Steampunk is like big goggles and like the top hat thing. I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
But you're thinking of more just like...
A fancy man.
A fancy man.
I'm Googling steampunk Porky Pig to see exactly how many fan art pictures exist of it. Oh, wow. Not many at all. In fact, literally none.
That's not many.
Wow. One of the first ones is this picture of a fucking cabbage that someone's put a big top hat on.
Hmm.
What? Oh, yeah. That seems pointless.
All right, guys. Well, there you go. There's an untapped... If you want the grand honor of being one of the only people on the internet to have done something, steampunk Porky Pig. Get onto it.
Don't get onto it.
There's this one
that Mad Lib has tickled me.
This is just a picture of a pig with goggles on. Not even Porky, just a random pig.
Well, that's
pretty
cool.
No, that's a steampunk regular pig.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah, so it's just taking the word Porky out.
But I googled Porky. Porky's in water. And there's pictures of Porky that are after that result.
Is this the first time you've used Google?
Yes. I've never had something that I care to find out about before. This is the first bit of information that's titillated me in this way. Anyway, folks, has it really been 150 episodes? After this, it will have been. And thank God.
It's been, I think we're like 2 weeks off of it having been 3 years of this as well.
Yep, because...
20th of September, my birthday, was when we released the first episode.
Yes, yes, that's right. I was trying to do... There's 52 weeks in a year.
You are an idiot.
But that
we
would
skipped
be,
a couple yeah, of weeks early yeah. on as well.
We
so.
Also, were we saying this on the show the other day? When we started, we would just like not do episodes for a couple of weeks because we didn't feel like it.
I think we're being harsh on ourselves there. I don't think it's because we didn't feel like it. I think it's because our schedules didn't line up and shit.
We
worked a
when
lot
harder
when we
started, we
that.
Didn't go, we're definitely going to do one of these every week. We were just sort of we'll do them. We didn't put them up on the same day.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we didn't realize there would be such an avalanche of support and listenership initially. Yeah. It was just like, this might be fun.
This was us being drunk on several occasions and talking about video games.
Yes.
And we thought, what if we What if we put this out into the public domain? Mm,
we were arrogant enough to think that our voices being recorded and our opinions being put on the internet was worth it.
Yeah.
It was worth the time.
And it turns out we were right.
Yeah.
People can't get enough of us. Me especially. Steampunk Willy. Fredo.
We Frog. Gladly opened ourselves up to the criticism and opinions of people on the internet, and not a day goes by that one of those things doesn't happen. And boy, what a life it is for the three of us.
I'm just glad that, I mean, you guys filter all the correspondence, but I'm just glad we've only ever had positive, you know, responses to the show.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Nothing but positive feedback.
I'm just glad that no one ever described my opinions like cancer. On a review on one of our episodes.
On a very obscure message board that I think was hosted on that I'd like, you had to dig to get it.
Yeah.
So you know what? It's your own fault.
No, that was on...
it was a hosting site. Yeah, they commented direct on the thing, not even Facebook.
Literally the only comment we've ever had through that service.
Yeah. I think they were trying to
get the purest, most at the source form.
They have to check this next week to upload the show.
Yeah, I think they were trying to embed it like a comment on SoundCloud where it's like, then that comes up for literally every person that listens to it.
Yes. But anyway, glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. If it had have happened, I would say that I completely agree with that person. But right. It didn't, so I won't.
Glad it's just a hypothetical then.
After 150 steaming hot episodes of this.
Steaming hot
as it. Not like a turd. Steaming
149
hot, like
steaming hot good ones.
Sure. Okay. What was the bad one?
This is the 150th.
Yeah.
This is episode 150.
Mm. Oh, yeah, okay.
You're assuming this one's going to be steaming hot.
This is the first bad one we've ever done. We thought we'd mix it up just to celebrate this milestone.
Oh, we're going to talk about E3 again.
What are some of your memories as we look back through the years?
I have been meaning to go back and, yeah, when I get time I'll do this. Oh, hey, maybe someone else could do this for us.
Oh,
wink, wink.
Go.
I would love a supercut of us speculating about what we think the NX is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to listen to that in 2018.
Yeah.
We talked about it enough that we must have nailed it at some point.
Oh, we did. I know that we did because I remember we went back to the episode where we had that leaked design of the with the peripherals and shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were like, yeah, that's probably it. And then it was that.
Right.
It wasn't really us speculating.
No. Though. Cancer, you say?
We almost could have. We were trying to work out for ages what to do for this episode. That could have been a very special 150. Because I reckon us, if you took all the clips of us talking about the NX before it had been announced, that's easily an hour.
Yeah.
Just a clip show about one specific topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we could have farted into the microphone for an hour and it would have been an episode.
I don't think I could. I don't think I have the diaphragm control. Yeah.
Not all at the one time. I mean, like, go 3 months in advance, like, hey, every time you're going to fart,
just
record it.
Pop the recorder on.
Yeah.
Get a load of Mr. Methane over here.
Cancelled.
I think the weird thing about this show is that for the first, year and a half, we speculated about the NX and about No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
And they are both things that Tommy was biased towards the NX and I was biased or at least more interested than you were in No Man's Sky. And we've both ended up loving them.
Mm.
One of them justifiably and with the grain and one of them, like I'm the only person who seems to love No Man's Sky.
Or at least in the early days.
Yeah.
You were one of the only nice talkers about it.
I will say though, I went into pre-order. I was going to not get a Switch on day one.
Mm.
And then I was like, well, I just kind of have to for the sake of the show. But I went in and put money down like maybe a week or two before it came out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had extremely cold feet about it. I went in and I was like, I think I'm making one of the biggest mistakes of my adult life. But also I was
$500.
Yeah, I was like, this is the...
I cannot recover from this amount. That is a lot of money, actually.
I was like, this is the peak of privilege to be able to put money down on something that you think is probably going to be very, very bad.
Yeah.
And this is after we'd played Breath of the Wild and all thought it wasn't very good.
And you'd gotten burnt by the Wii U in that generation.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
If it hadn't have been... I was thinking this the other day. If it hadn't have been for doing this podcast, I don't, yeah, I wonder when I would have gone. Maybe I would have been like you, Ben, and just still once Breath of the Wild had come out and people were into it, yeah, I might have raced down to the shops and gone, all right, fuck it, I've got to go in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wasn't even a fan of Zelda at that point. I was like, fuck, 10 out of 10, I guess I got to experience
it. It was
this.
So different to all the other ones as well.
Sure, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
This got you a Switch. I met my wife through this podcast.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Princess Peach.
Ben Vanel.
yeah, it's been fun.
Oh, man, a lot of changes. We've gone through girlfriends. Girlfriends, yeah, have come and gone.
Yeah.
We've moved houses.
They've gone. They haven't come that much.
Oh,
a
brother.
Classic joke.
Yes. Brother.
Oh. Yes. Oh, it's good to laugh.
Shout out to Adam's actual girlfriend.
We're pre-recording this episode. Who knows?
I've been caught out by that before. yeah, we're talking about this as if this is the last episode.
It's just realizing, like, it's been almost 3 years of our lives.
It is because in my head, this is still a pretty new thing. Like, it feels like, because I have another podcast that I've done for so long, and in my head, this is like, oh, this is the other one that I've just started doing, and then realizing like how much stuff has come out. And when we started recording this ever, it was like summer, and we would do it at Ben's house, which you've only moved once since then, but still, you're in a completely different area.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were living with someone else who used to frequently be featured off mic when he'd walk through the living room.
Oh, right.
And now we literally never talk about him on here as if he's dead, in spite of the fact that you two work with him in a sketch group.
Yes. Yeah, we always say Chimp Cop featuring Adam Knox, Ben Vanel, Rosie Vanel,
Ben's sister,
and more.
Yeah, there's four people, but it's like for some reason Rosie Vanel and Ben's sister are separate entries on the list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, diversity is important.
That makes up 50% of the lineup that way.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
I don't really remember much from it.
Of us doing this.
Yeah. Mm. I'm trying to think of a memory. It all blends into the one thing.
It does. A lot of it does. But there are things like that Nintendo Switch hands-on thing was really
great.
Cool.
I think that was one of
Mario.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was one of the best things we've ever gotten to do as a result of this show.
Totally.
Getting to get early access to something like that. Mm. That was this, like, it had been like fully revealed like a week before.
Yeah.
And we got to be some of the first people in the world to have a go at it.
Literally among the first several hundred people in the world.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
Cool in and of its own self, but let alone for me personally being such a big fan of this company for my entire life. That
I will say, when Nintendo let us play Mario Odyssey early as well.
Yeah, that was cool. When we did an episode after we'd had the hands-on with the Switch and we got in trouble from the listeners for spending half an hour talking about a helicopter that we'd seen out the window.
I do actually remember that helicopter.
Sorry to cut you off. I was just busting to get that one out.
I was just going to say, like, to say early on, the nicest thing has actually genuinely been meeting all people who've listened to it and interacting with most of them online.
I was going
to
say, the online, like, friendships that I've made, certainly, like I've mentioned before, the D&D stuff where there's people across the world sort of getting together and playing together.
It's great that they made another one of them, the D&D movies, Dumb and Dumber, you're talking about, right?
Yeah. I play dumb.
Yeah. I'm not in it.
No, I guess I shouldn't have expected you to finish that sentence.
No, I'm smart. I'm clever.
Okay. You're the guy who dies of a stomach ulcer in the first one there.
Who's that?
Oh, yeah,
the
bad
parrot?
Guy.
The cockatoo?
Guy.
Oh, the bad guy.
Is there a parrot cockatoo? There's a
that guy that dies of a stomach ulcer. Oh, you must be talking about a parrot.
No, one of them owns a cockatoo, I reckon it is.
No, it's a parrot.
A parrot?
He steals a parrot from a blind kid.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then replaces it with a fucking ping pong ball.
With a carrot.
Yeah.
Sounds the same. That'd be dumb. I could ride those movies.
I should know the plot better, seeing as I was in a group that that played it. But yeah,
can
I was
going
to say the live shows as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Meeting those people, having people come to multiple of them despite the debacle of our first one.
Mm-hmm. Now, why would you ruin a stroll down memory lane with such an unpleasant memory?
That's the problem when you stroll down memory lane. You get to one cobblestone at some point where you're like, oh, yeah, my dad died. Again, my dad's alive.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to remember when...
I forgot to write him a birthday card before I left, though.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Fucking hell.
Well, you fucked it.
I'll send him a postcard.
There you go.
Yeah.
What was the turning point where we realized that people were actually listening to this and a good number of them? I can't really remember when I was like, oh, this is actually worth doing because it's popular.
When the Queen sent me that letter.
Oh, when you turned 100.
Yeah. Well, you 50 episodes ago. That was pretty special.
I was listening back to a relatively early episode because we had guests like Michael Hing on.
It's not a yo-yo. It's not a yo-yo that you're holding.
I'm holding a tape measure and I'm mucking about with it.
He's got a tape measure.
Oh, the Velcro's not a, you know, different bit.
A fleshlight, because I do have my dick in it.
Yes.
You're holding my tape measure and you're throwing it towards the ground like you think it's going to bounce back up.
Yeah.
He's always got to fidget with something. When it was at my place, you'd have the cushion. You'd play with the cushion.
Dude, I miss them spinners.
You can still own one.
No, it's not cool. But God. Throwing a tape measure towards the ground? Dude, that is cool.
Hey, brother, how far to the ground?
Let me tell you real quick. Where do you want to go from is the question. I guess that's
about arm height.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's definitely more than what it went to, which is 50 centimeters.
Nice.
More than half a meter down there to that bad boy.
Wow, that's actually good to know.
Let's make it 150 centimeters in honor of this episode. Came back up like a
yo-yo. Not going to happen. Pretty similar to a yo-yo.
It is pretty fun. I'll sell it to you for $50.
Dollar an inch, done.
What were you saying?
Oh, I remember having some guests on early days like Hing and people like that who... I assume drew some numbers in, but then of course Dum Dum listeners came across very early as well, and I think it was one of the first things I've been a part of, aside from maybe Chimp Cop, where early days it caught on and I felt it was good, and it just was that perfect storm of like, oh, this is fun and people seem to like it.
So is that to say that Chimp Cop has caught on but that you don't think it's very good?
No.
About three quarters of it is good.
No, I was saying this...
Nice.
This and Chimp Cop.
Yeah.
The end.
Cool. All right. Yep. That's enough fucking jacking off at the start of the episode. Mm. It's time to do a fun little theme.
Okay.
That we thought of. We're strolling down memory road.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I remember? Memories.
Ah.
Specifically ones that I have attached to video games, which this podcast is about.
Well, you know that video game consoles and PCs use memory to play games.
Ah.
That's all.
That is true, though. Another tie-in. Memory foam.
Yeah.
Would maybe be a comfortable thing to sit on. Some kind of gaming chair made out of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my bed is a memory foam mattress. So
I don't really like memory foam, honestly. It feels like sleeping with the same person every night. I want my bed to be like a stranger every night.
Oh, wow.
This bed
once
don't
again,
remember me.
Shout out to Adam's girlfriend.
Check out Neil Strauss over here.
Very, very patient woman.
So is it?
You know what I think when I look at your girlfriend? How does she do it?
You know what I think? Wow, she's tall.
I think, wow, what a lucky girl gets to be with me all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, man.
Sure. Okay.
I go back. That just brings me back to my original point. How does she do it?
So we've got some of our favorite video game memories from our whole life here.
Yep.
We're going to narrow it down to a top five each, making 15, one-tenth of 150.
Oh,
and
it all makes sense.
It was written in the stars.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got something like... Obviously, we all like video games. That's why we've done this podcast for so long. And we've tried to...
Just brushing by that so nonchalantly.
Trying to choose...
Obviously, we're very much into this art form and this thing that we play every day of our lives. We enjoy bonding over talking about it. But anyway, moving right on.
I've tried to pick some here that aren't obvious ones.
Mm, me too.
That aren't things that we've discussed through the course of our century and a half Don Bradman special.
We've turned up boys and a half.
I've specifically gone for very obvious ones. But so talking about like... moments that are, we were thinking like, oh, we've never really like formally specifically on the show gone like, here's each of our top five games or whatever. And that felt a little generic and not much room for discussion. But we're going for like specific.
People kind of know what they are at this point as well.
Yeah.
I like Deus Ex. It's good. The first one. I like Metal Gear Solid 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You like Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, no.
Tommy likes I'm a Baby Simulator Nintendo
Why has the company put its own name at the end of the title of this game?
Oh, I reckon they did put a lot of effort into that one. I'm a baby simulator, you know, Nintendo, whatever.
But, you know, it came out on the Wii U, so no one's played it. Guys, it's really good. There's a Switch port coming out. Check it out.
I mean, they did that with Nintendo Land. So, yeah. You know.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Another fact that I've brought to the table.
And plonked it down to a deafening thud.
How can a thud be deaf? I guess if a thud is so loud.
Yes! Yes! Of course!
If a thud is loud enough to deafen you,
yeah,
it would be deafening. By definition.
I guess
nothing better than someone, and I do this constantly in my life.
Oh, me too. Halfway through, you realize.
Halfway through a statement, and it's like, do I double down and keep this going, or do I just back out now?
I mean, if I say the right thing, it sounds like I always knew it.
How do people get through that door with a key? So, all right. Do you want to go first then, Tommy? If yours are the obvious ones, I reckon it might be fun to start with a bit of a...
Well, yeah, okay. Mine.
I also want to set the table a little bit,
mm-hmm.
or at least ask you guys: Have you picked out memories in terms of like I was 7 years old and this was the first thing I ever played, or have you picked out like moments in games that are more related to how good they are in the game?
I've picked memories of things that did not happen to me. So I've made them. I've made all of these up. These are from things that I've never personally experienced myself.
Right. Okay. Sure.
I've invented memories.
I've done a half and half.
Right.
I've picked just kind of like favorite moments that have like really sat with me. That when I didn't think about this list too much. I just tried to go like for me for my criteria was like you've got to be able to just like reel them off the top of the dome. They've got to have had that kind of impact that you can just reel them off the top of the dome.
Sure.
At it, the first things that come to your head.
Off the top of the dome.
Yeah.
The Bomb Funk MC style.
Yes. That's one of the things on this list.
Oh, great. Yeah.
All right. I'll kick it off because I was just talking about this game. But the finishing the Great Plateau in Breath of the Wild and being up that first tower and parachuting off it is a great moment as you're coming into land and you realize that you can go anywhere and that you have this huge world ahead of you and so much to discover. And also for the fact of, as we discussed, us having all played a demo of it at that hands-on event, thinking it was not very good and actually like finishing the Great Plateau and going, oh, okay, you leave this and this is just a training area, which is why it felt so kind of stunted to us when we were playing it.
Yeah.
And this is actually good. And now I'm at the very base of this huge thing that I now get to discover. And also I knew, like, I had just left to go to Adelaide. So I was like on a plane playing it on the Switch as well. I'm like, I've got heaps of travel coming up in the next couple of months. And I know that this is going to be something that is going to sit with me for... like all of these trips that I have coming up.
Finding out the Switch is awesome at the same time.
Yes,
as well.
Yes. That was fucking a great moment.
So that is on my list of honorable mentions. That exact thing. Huh. Leaving the Great Plateau in Breath of the Wild. And for me it was sort of, I went into that game sort of not like as a contrarian, but a little bit like, oh, everyone's saying it's the best game of all time. I'll find out what the real truth is. I'm the only guy smart enough to understand if this is actually good.
Actually, the camera makes me feel sick. So it isn't good.
I've been waiting for you for 150 episodes for you to just admit that that's what you're like when it comes to appreciating art. And I'm ready to shut this thing down right now. Mission accomplished.
We did it.
We killed Bin Laden.
So that was my attitude going into it, essentially. Uh-huh. Very skeptical about the Switch as well. And it was a combination of finishing the Great Plateau and also getting a pro controller and being like, yes, oh, this is how I'm meant to play this game.
Yeah.
And realizing everyone was right. This is one of the best games ever made. I'm loving it. And like you said, there's another 90 hours for me to enjoy.
And just being up that huge tower and then just that, I think it's the old guy just being like, you just go. And you can see so much of it and you just kind of like pick a vague direction to head in, but you're like, oh, I could have gone anywhere from here and it will be different all the way around. Is just, like landing and then just that first bit of setting off. was, yeah, extremely good.
Yep. That was a sick game. I played it on the Wii U, so I didn't really get the 1-2 punch of the 1-2 Switch deal. But it's a very good game.
Yes.
By the way, Ben, you're not better than me just because one of my top fives is in your honorable mention. As it seemed like you were very subtly trying to go, well, I mean, this didn't crack the great man's top five, but it did sneak into the honorables.
I mean, yeah, look, I saw The Shape of Water, but...
I think the facts speak for themselves.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, do you want to go next, Ben, or?
I'd love to.
All right.
Please, treat us to something from the actual list. This is a outrageous thing to get shitty about. It's just genuinely angry about it. Not even want to do the rest of the episode.
This is one that I reckon... It's not a very obscure one. It's pretty universal.
The moment jumping in Mario.
The moment you jump in Mario. The moment in the first Portal game where you finish the testing period and you're on a conveyor belt into an incinerator and you have to figure out. It's not very hard, but it took me a few goes.
You
I have
die
to say.
10 times, yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
To a reload point that's very quick behind it.
Yes. Yeah. You basically are like, okay, I've finished the game. You know, the testing's over. This AI is like, well, now it's time to die. And you go into this incinerator. And yeah, you're right. Like, I died a bunch of times. Like, what's going on? Because you do reload, you don't finish the game.
Yeah.
And you have to look around and you go, like, oh, right, that wall. I can shoot a portal on that wall and then I can shoot a portal in front of me and I'm fucking out of here. And you go from this sterile, controlled series of tests into behind the scenes. And like at this point in time, Portal isn't, you know, a revolutionary experience if you play it today. But for when it came out and for what it's done to sort of puzzle games since, that was an incredible moment.
100% agree with that.
I remember seeing it on like friends play it on their PCs or seeing it like in the shop and just like really wanting to play it, but we didn't have a computer that was like powerful enough to handle it.
Right.
But it looked like the coolest thing you could imagine at that time.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, what the fuck? Like it just seemed like unthinkable that you could do that kind of wild shit in a game.
Totally. So that fact, the gravity related puzzle solving is one thing. The writing I thought was fantastic. The sort of dark humor that again has become quite common in gaming. And other media was something that really grabbed me. I was always a fan of that style of sort of science fiction and humor. And it nails it, in my opinion. And
it's
then,
like Douglas Adams sort of style of thing.
Exactly, which I've always been a fan of. And then again, this sort of Philip K. Dickian style of sci-fi where it's like, oh, everything you thought was real.
Dickian. Remember him from Hey Hey?
That's easily my least favorite thing about doing this show is when you do what Ben's just done and you just know. You just know that the other two are going to fucking butt in with some meaningless, that's like a penis.
Dickie and like Ian Dixon. Yeah, okay.
Sorry, what were you saying about dicks?
I love them. that thing of like your reality being, you know, like peeled back and seeing underneath. Man. And like the cake is a lie is a fucking meme that's about 10 years old now. But that was cool. That thing of this very structured AI system, like, yeah, this is what you do and this is how you do it and just follow your orders and then, yeah, having this sort of crazy world revealed to you afterwards and that still being cool, that ending as well being awesome. That whole thing is something that's really stuck with me.
The way it turned a puzzle game into a narrative-focused game was really cool because I remember around that time it was like that and this game called Puzzle Quest on the 3DS, which was like on the regular DS, it was an RPG thing that was way lamer. Because it was just like Bejeweled and it had a story forced on top. But that moment in particular, like A, teaching you to break its own mechanics of the game by like kind of giving you the hint by reloading you back in and you had to figure it out yourself. It did not tell you at all.
Yeah.
Having it be tied into the narrative and still be interesting, cool puzzles.
Yeah.
And yeah, that like tone it had was, that game was very good at the time. And you're right that it now... is the Seinfeld's not funny thing.
A little bit,
really introduced a few things.
Even internet culture-wise, like it feels a little bit outdated.
It popped at exactly the same, especially the humor aspect of it, like came along right at the start of everyone kind of going like a little, that old comment from some forum where someone's like, holds up, Spork, and it's all like that sort of humor where it's like, oh.
Yeah, Ken has cheeseburger. It was around then, and this was like, oh, this is smarter. It was like, it was sort of for nerds.
But like, it was like counterculture-ish a little bit at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, so that's one of my memories.
Just to follow up on something you were saying before about jumping in Mario, I want to point out that I went to look up a list of like the... Just to, you know, I just Googled like best moments in games and thought it might jog something.
Sure.
Some real useless stuff out there. Like I went through one where it was like the top 50 and number one was World 1, Level 1 in Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Get fucked. Like there's that, if that's your greatest moment in video gaming, you are fucked.
I can see a justification for that as... the first time you ever play a video game, and that would be a very memorable moment.
Or like an important moment maybe, or like a significant part of history, but like memorable. It's not as memorable as...
Oh, here we go.
I'm going to choose, similar to Tommy's one...
Oh, you think Tommy's better than me?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
I'm going to pick Morrowind's open world in general. Because that was the first open world thing I ever saw. It was the first game that really let me break it and fuck with it and go around and kind of create dumb situation and like and do what I wanted to basically in it. I remember playing Ocarina of Time way back in the day and like kind of walking around because that was such a like well realized world for the time, walking around and wishing that it did exactly what Morrowind did.
Right. Yeah.
Which was let you kind of go anywhere and do anything. You could be a fucking drug dealer if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You could be a shoe salesperson. Mm-hmm.
That's such a great thing about, I reckon we're in such a like a lucky generation of like the age we are where games have grown up with us from like being a little kid and like, oh cool, this thing that you control stuff on the telly, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, having that experience of the first time that a game like lets you do something that you wish you'd always been able to do in games.
Totally.
As you've gotten a bit older with it too.
It was something so new and so like just mind-blowing and seemed infinite at the time, and it obviously wasn't, and it was a pretty limited game, and if you go back to it now, like it's clunky.
Yeah, that thing of like, I mean, I talked, I think on our Rockstar GTA Bandcamp about GTA 3 being that for me in a way where it just like breaks your whole conception of what a game can be. But yeah, Morrowind is the next one that does it. Like you can walk into a house and knock a vase off a shelf. And that seems dumb, but like you just couldn't do that before.
Totally. And you could walk into a house and then get bored and walk out and go somewhere over the other side of the massive world at the time and probably still now. And it didn't matter. Like you could fuck off from the main story. You could kill the main story characters. It didn't matter. You could do what you wanted to.
Yep.
And that aspect of that game was really, really, really cool at the time.
Yeah. Completely.
I had knocking a vase off a shelf in my honorable mention. Cool. All right. I'll go my next one.
Nah, just stop.
Yeah, let's stop. Yeah.
In Grand Theft Auto 5, when they're talking about Lifehacker and then you see the front of the building and you see the logo and you realise they've been talking about Facebook this whole time. And it's
were they?
Fuck, mate. Me dead.
They skewered Facebook.
Holy shit. In that context, it actually makes a lot more sense.
Yes, brother.
Oh, man. I owe them a lot more credit.
Okay, it's such
is that why there was 69 on one of the runways?
No, that was just the number it was up to, I think. I don't think that was a joke.
Right.
The number of the beast with two backs. No, this is a very, very small moment. I've talked about it on the show before, but there's a bit in the very start of Resident Evil 4, which is already one of my favorite games, where you find a dog in a trap, in like a bear trap, and you let him out and he runs away. And then when you go back, when you fight the first big boss, if you've let him out, the dog like comes in and helps you in a very small way. But I think that was like one of the first things I had seen in a game of something like a real kind of branching path actually having some kind of effect.
Sure.
Like something actually coming to benefit you. Like I did, like when I let the dog out, he just ran off and I was like, okay, that's a weird, pointless thing. I guess it's cool that that's in there, but like it actually having an effect on you and actually helping you.
Yeah.
Again, because I hadn't really seen that in a game before, and you know, this is kind of coming out of an era where games are very, really limited, and it's starting to become apparent like how closed off most things are. Just having this actual effect kind of like happen felt, yeah, just felt so huge.
It almost felt like a huge thing. Such an unnecessary and thoughtful detail
yeah.
as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably feels and would have felt at the time, well, at the time it would have felt, yeah, like you said, this incredibly thoughtful thing. And in the years since, games have tried to basically litter the story and worlds with those moments. But the more they do it, the less convincing it is.
Yeah, and the less effect it had because you trained for it, but you just weren't trained for it at the time.
Totally.
And it just felt like so human. It made the dog feel like he was like an actual living, breathing thing because it's like, oh, he remembered and he loves me now. So he's come back to help. He could see that he could tell that I was in danger and he's come to like help me out. Like,
totally.
Even though it's just a pre-programmed thing, it felt like, fuck, this game is alive. Like, this is real stuff happening in here.
Totally.
Yeah, a really, really great and just really sweet moment. It's like, no, he wants to help me.
Yeah.
Anyway, fucking put a bullet in between his eyes immediately.
Just I fucking hate dogs.
I thought you were going to say the bit at the start of the game where the bell rings and all of the like crazy Spanish people leave and Leon goes, where's everybody going? Bingo?
Ah.
And then it like zooms out and gives you the title card.
Right. I don't remember that at all.
Like they're putting their best foot forward. But like the dialogue in that being so lame and corny was part of it being fun.
Oh man, yeah, if I'd remembered that definitely would have gotten this piece of shit dog off the list. That'd be great if then the final boss of that game had been set in a bingo hall. He was right all along.
When you put the final bullet between his eyes, you say Yahtzee.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
A different one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a left turn instead of a yeah. I got it. So
bingo.
Where's everybody going? So my next one, and this is a spoiler for a Telltale game.
Which Telltale game?
Of Thrones.
Okay. Right.
Fuck it.
That did genuinely take me a moment to figure out why. Okay, yes. Okay, this is a spoiler for Telltale Game of Thrones.
And I'm not going to spoil it in specifics because I think it's a great game and it's worth playing if you like Telltale games. But speaking of choice or the illusion of choice in games, Telltale is the king of that now. Basically, like the first time through, you're like, oh man, I influenced every single aspect of this story by all these choices. And if you ever play them again, it's like 70% of this happens the same way.
Yeah.
But there is a specific moment at the end of episode one of Telltale Game of Thrones that you cannot influence and is incredibly shocking. One of the three characters you control is murdered and you cannot stop it and it's awful and it affects the rest of the series. And I really like it in a from a developer that is, yeah, known for the illusion of choice.
Yeah.
I thought that this scripted moment was done incredibly well.
Because you felt like you'd fucked it?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You feel like you've made the wrong choice.
Right.
Wrong choices along the way. And sure, like you find out, it always happens. But the effect on me as a player at the time was like, God damn it, what did I do wrong? And I thought it was done really, really well. And I mean, for a Game of Thrones game, I should have seen it coming.
Mm.
But I didn't, and that's why I liked
cool.
it so much.
That's very
it was shocking
writing.
When people don't die.
Yeah, yeah.
The ending of the first season of The Walking Dead that they made was nearly on my list.
Is that may have shown up in all of the lists I read?
It's between Lee and Clem, the two main characters at the end there.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to spoil it because there's no point because it's not on my list. But if you haven't played that first season of The Walking Dead, still good.
That's the
even
one
if
I've
you're
played.
Over zombies, it's great.
Mm. Right.
But the Telltale have a couple of high spots and some low points too.
Totally. I
like
think
this podcast.
I didn't have it on my list. I actually took it off for that. But The Wolf Among Us has some great moments. Again, mostly scripted, but just because it's delivered like a cool movie,
sure,
it hits you emotionally. So yeah.
Well, speaking of cool movies, I'm gonna combine two into one.
Whoa!
Here.
Wow.
There's two Metal Gear Solid series moments.
Okay.
That all I want to put into the one thing.
Okay.
The kind of three. The intro and the ending to Metal Gear Solid 3 are some of the best like cinematic video game shit that's happened. The intro is like you start doing this mission. There's a lot of gameplay before they bring in like Snake gets punched off a bridge.
Whoa.
It's like cracked and broken in the next to this river, nearly dead.
Mm-hmm.
You see like the bad guys flying off and it brings in this like James Bond bullshit opening.
Mm.
It's like this big thing with like snake skeletons eating the title cards of who worked on the game and shit.
Nice.
And it's out of nowhere. It's got this dumb, cheesy song that they recorded for it mm-hmm. called Snake Eater.
Mm-hmm.
Do something with that, dickheads. and it's just like the most crazy, bombastic, silly opening.
Bondbastic.
Bondbastic is a great usage of what I've just said. And then it just sets you up. So it's the most, again, like the beginning itself is really dumb because it like is this 7 minute long like sequence of a guy jumping out of a plane.
Right.
And it takes forever. And it's so like Japanese in the way it's filmed of like hitting the button and then the thing comes down and everyone's like, what? And it's just ridiculous. And it's the most like, I'm going to fucking play the rest of this thing opening to a game.
Right.
And then the ending has like a cool twist, but that's not as good. And then also, I fucking love Metal Gear Solid and I'm doing multiple.
Yeah.
Also, thanks to all the people who listen to the show who support us financially. And we're great to meet fans.
Metal Gear Solid
wait,
4.
Wait, doesn't, weren't you going to mention, were you going to mention the ladder in 3?
Oh, the ladder is fucking sick too, where yeah. you climb up it and there's some singing. Everything about 3 is fucking awesome. But then in Metal Gear Solid 4, there's a similar thing where towards the end, you are going through this like fucked microwave tunnel that's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, I've read about this. I played this game. I just didn't get this far. But
right.
Yeah, I read about this.
It kind of goes split screen and shows you everybody dying as you're like also dying, going through this microwave tunnel. And then the very ending of the game goes back on it and everybody survives and it's a bit fucking lame.
Mm.
But you're hammering the triangle button and that is all you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But fuck, you're hammering it. And yeah. it's encouraging you so much to hammer this button. And it's like just such a summation of everything that series was with these dumb tricks basically to make relatively simple gameplay often.
Yep.
This really cinematic thing that you got so sucked in by.
Yeah, right.
And that series was fucking great. Rest in peace.
Great.
Everything from Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, I mean, I also, it's not on my list or anything, but the first time I ever played the first Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation, I'd never played anything like it. And again, it's one of those things that changes what I understand video games to be. And the first time you get caught and the sound goes off and you got to fucking run and the time is counting down, I just never experienced anything like it. It's a fantastic series.
Cool.
The end.
Okay. You just stopped really abruptly. That threw me off.
Bingo!
All right. My number 3... would be the beginning moments of Super Mario Galaxy, which was a game that I'd really been looking forward to. And it has, I think, the soundtrack in that, at least the start of that, this orchestral music that is so kind of like just grand and like sweeping and epic. Like it just, you being like thrown on this planet with zero gravity, and it shows you very quickly, like, you know, exactly what you're going to be doing. Mm. And, you know, similar to Breath of the Wild, where you just go like, wow, this is only the first little mini part of this.
Right.
And I'm already in, and all that's going to happen from here is it's going to expand and get more and more and more and more as it goes along. Just all those little elements in the first opening moments of that was just like, oh, this is everything I had wanted this to be, and right. was worried that it might not be as good. But yeah, it all comes together. That music especially, I was re-listening to it the other day, and it's so great.
The
and
whole
I think that's the real peak of anything they've done with a 3D Mario game. And I don't know how they can ever top it.
The whole thing is so happy.
Yeah.
Just right. like joyful. Right. And I agree with you that pair of games are probably going to be the peak for a while.
Yeah. I don't know what they can really do to outdo it.
Mario Unless Galaxy HD, baby.
Yeah. Unless they did a third one, but I think that low gravity or zero gravity in a lot of cases just suits that so well, being able to run all around the little worlds.
I feel like they did everything with it as well. Like that's why Mario Galaxy 2 exists, because they literally
had
everything else and they were like, well,
ideas,
we'll put it in.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Initially we were thinking about doing our top 5 games, just full stop. And I noticed a lot of them lined up with my top 5 favorite video game soundtracks, because the music is so important. It's it provides the emotional connection, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, this it's not like, I mean, I'd always remembered Mario Galaxy very fondly, but it was putting the music on that made me go, that's right, I fucking loved this and this moment specifically.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah, I completely agree about the music with that game as well. It was very, very good. And something that Odyssey is lacking.
Mm. I think so. Yeah. With a couple of exceptions, but for the... but
like the one garden...
The Wooded Kingdom is awesome. Then everything else is a little generic.
Yeah.
Speaking of games with good music, Mass Effect 2.
Hey, I'd nearly had this on my list.
I have included the opening as my memorable moment.
What happened in the opening?
So,
what are openings here?
Yeah, you're on your ship, the Normandy.
Yeah. Oh, right.
You're
flying
around and it's like, wait a minute, some big Reaper here a big ship.
Yeah.
Has appeared out of nowhere and is shooting us down, and there's lasers going everywhere, and you're like, fuck. You're running through the ship, everyone's dying, getting sucked out into space. You get to the cockpit, you're like, oh fuck, okay, what do I gotta do? I gotta go back out here, and then you get sucked out into space. And
that was pretty scary.
Yeah.
That was really scary.
Yeah.
A cup blew past Tommy's window.
A coffee cup that one of you left on my balcony the other day.
And I tell you what, it made the noise of Freddy Krueger rattling his fucking fingers down a wall.
A gust of wind blew it right in front of all of us, just good along Lord. The length of my window. And we all had no choice but to stop in stunned silence.
Wow.
Well, that was terrifying.
That was genuinely terrifying.
Yeah. One of my memorable moments, the dogs jumping through the window in Resident Evil and that fucking coffee cup.
Fuck. As I was saying.
You're sucked out into space.
Your character receives the suck out into space, and no matter what you've done, you can't stop it, and you basically fall through the atmosphere and die.
I'll tell you my one problem with that sequence.
Yes.
After that happens, the title card comes up and it says Mass Effect 2.
Very, very nice, subtle music cue.
Except for the fact that there's a planet visible in the background, and the curvature of the planet goes in the opposite direction to the curvature on the planet in the logo.
My God.
And they could have had it fade up and just be in the logo, but instead it goes the opposite way. And I know I sound like a bit of a Neil deGrasse Tyson sort of thing here.
Bring that coffee cup back. I'd rather listen to that.
It really bothered me at the time, and I obviously still remember that.
Yeah.
From, 8 years ago?
Yeah. But so I picked that as my memorable moment because I'd never seen a protagonist die at the start of a game.
Such a big, fuck you, here's a new one as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you literally, like, they're like, oh, we recreated your body from your DNA and you are starting over again.
Do you know part of why they did that is because the difference in graphics between Mass Effect 1 and 2 apparently was so massive that they wanted to give you the chance to remake your character's face.
Yes.
Because a lot of them looked really fucked in the first game.
It was one of the first games actually that I can remember where your save file and all the decisions you made in the first game carried over to the sequel.
Yeah, it was definitely... it was. Maybe the first one. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty
something
cool.
That Telltale and shit do pretty often now.
Yeah. But yeah, that was pretty groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And then, after that, an amazing game that probably is in my top five.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
But also, great music across the board. Mm-hmm. Really atmospheric. So,
Mass Effect 2, motherfucker.
All right. Didn't have to swear, but...
I reckon, speaking of audio design earlier...
Yes. Right then.
He's technically still right.
Know,
that was
I
earlier.
I know. I didn't know if I should pick him up on it or
I
not.
I noticed it and I was like, I wonder if we're going to let this slide.
Shodan's voice in System Shock 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
That thing gave me actual nightmares.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so well done. So I can't remember who she is, but it's the lead singer of some band. And I think it was her. She recorded the voice and then put just the best digital altering, terrifying fucking robot voice on this thing. And like Shodan as a villain, the whole thing, she would just communicate with you through, you know, the fucking little radio thing that would show up on your screen and had this haunting, terrifying voice. And there wasn't a lot of voice in games then. It was 99.
Yeah.
So having this spooky thing talk to you as you played this scary game with coffee cups jumping out constantly. I remember that was one of the earliest things where I was like, oh, audio.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so fucking well done. The whole character of Shodan and the reveal of her in that game, but also the voice specifically was incredibly fucking well done. And I hope that they nail that again for the third one.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that actually runs right into one of my ones. This is a very oddly specific moment, but growing up, I had a friend who we'd play Super Nintendo together. And one of the games that we would play a lot was the Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time,
mm-hmm.
Which the start of the very first level, it tells you that you're. It comes up with a screen of like New York City or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a voice of like, I think it's like one of the turtles, like a digitized voice that goes, "The Big Apple, 3 a.m. And it like, and it get like so, such a, again, digitized voice at that time. It's even before, before System
That's
Shock.
That's like 91 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Was like, how the fuck, because no games did that. It's like, how the fuck have they done this?
And they all sounded terrible. It was someone from the office, like the Super Metroid one where he's like, "The last Metroid is captivity." It's just like, dude, what? This guy was just clearly working there. He was the nearest to the microphone.
Yeah. I remember game like NES games like Kung Fu where it's just like a sound like,
Yeah.
That's all you got.
Yeah.
But this is on there just because it was like, I used to love playing that game. Those old Turtles beat 'em up games were so fun, especially at that age where it's like, just, you know, you're just running around just beating the shit out of people on the screen. And me and my friend used to play it all the time and just like, that I looked it up on YouTube the other day and like that digitized thing just like reminds me of being at my mate's house after school, you know, eating chips and drinking soft drink and playing Ninja Turtles for hours and hours and hours on end.
Nice. Yeah. That, whatever I was going to say is gone.
Something about
That genre of like that beat 'em up style game is basically dead now, but also is kind of what like Bayonetta and whatever is now.
It's a little bit,
sort of transitioned into that.
Yeah, I guess so. Beat 'em ups, like, it's like fighting games and action games.
Yeah.
There's way more skill involved in those ones, I would say. This is just like you're just walking left to right, hitting the attack button, maybe dodging every now and then, but dodging requires no finesse whatsoever. It's like get your three hits in and then just move away for a bit and then come back and finish the job.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that number three?
That was my number four.
Hell yeah.
Okay, what should I do? Okay, this is a kind of a spoiler, but I think we've all played it now.
For what?
For the game Inside.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a short game too and a very good one. So if you haven't played it, I think it's on everything now.
Yeah.
Go and play it.
Yes. Turn off if you want, but I think I know what you're about to say and we're going to have to be specific.
Yeah.
There's no point to do this.
This game is getting spoiled. Go play it.
Yes. The end, right?
Yeah. That end was great.
Turn into a giant ball of people.
Yeah.
The amount
roll
of
around.
Great build up. Yeah.
The detail and the animation of that giant ball of people you turn into is incredible.
That in itself is maybe the most memorable aspect. It's like watching like how all the legs and the arms and stuff are smushing around and it's unsettling.
Yeah.
In itself.
And for something where like the beginning of it, everything leading up to that point is very like sneaking around, very quiet,
obviously
very
bad guys looking for you. You're obviously the good little kid coming in.
Extremely, tense and slow paced.
To then get to this end that is just cathartic and smashing stuff and rolling around and just like the very end of it being pretty much the opposite in every way of what the preceding, 95% of the game
just
is.
Just what a wonderful reward for having got that far.
Really leaves you at the very end as well with like a, kind of a flat, not flat in a bad way, just like, oh, I'm not sure what happened.
In a lot of...
Makes you think.
In a lot of...
It does.
in the same way a lot of great movies do. They leave you on a moment that is, not flat, but sort of like it leaves like an echo.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I'm going to have to think about that, I think.
Sort of like, not to spoil it, but The Last of Us, which if we're happy to move on, my pick is not the end of The Last of Us, but the opening of The Last of Us.
Yeah, I had that in my honorable boys. I had three from The Last of Us, so...
Well, let's do all of them.
Yeah.
The spoilers for The Last of Us, go play that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, like sort of, if these are the top five basically games in a way in all of our opinions and... Go and play them all.
The ending is one of the most like cleverly written and well done video game endings that's ever been.
Mm.
The beginning is a fucking intense and really effective emotional fucking punch.
Yeah.
More so than I think I've gotten from any other game.
Yeah, it works really well.
Really, really well done, well directed, well acted. Every element of it is great.
Mm.
That was my one, the opening. What was your other one from The Last of Us?
The giraffes.
Oh, yeah. Them giraffes.
Them long necks.
Hey, mate. I'll go a couple of fucking long necks, mate. Melbourne bitter, if you please.
Jeez.
That bit?
Yeah. So that bit.
Just quickly,
Aussie caricature.
Very quickly going back to Inside. That bit, like I'd played through pretty much all of it by myself, and then the last maybe hour or so I did while my then housemate was sitting there watching me play it.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah. And we're just kind of chatting because it's very quiet and, you know, sort of backgroundy. And then I get up to that bit and we're just going crazy. It's like, woo, like how good is this? Like just the perfect thing of just like someone else happening to be there to watch through that bit with you was like, oh, I'm actually glad I'm experiencing this with someone else in the room. That's sick.
Do you know what? Like, I snuck in with a little bit of Last of Us there, but we went back to Inside, so I think I get to pick another one. just because there's a lot here, and I reckon we'll all enjoy this one because it's a little bit left of center.
Well, I wanted to keep talking about The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah? Let's do that.
Well, so I completely agree about the opening.
Yeah.
Like, I mentioned Mass Effect 2's opening before in terms of a character dying, but... people often say like killing a kid in a movie is a cheap way to get emotion.
But sure.
The fact that you play as her at the very start of the game, it really gets you invested.
I think the transition they make from her being the focus to Joel being the focus during that sequence as well is really well done.
Yeah.
Because, it's not like, oh, your main character died. It's like you feel like you get attached to this daughter and then your daughter dies. Just not a hacky way.
Exactly, yeah. Like I talked about Game of Thrones and how it completely rug was pulled out from under me because of the good writing and the good execution. Yeah. Same thing with The Last of Us.
The music in that game as well, what little of it is, that it's muted cleverly, but when it does come in, it's super effective.
Absolutely. And the ending, I think, it has to get a mention, the lie. The lie that Joel tells is...
and everything leading up to that too. Like
why that lie is important. You're right. Just everything leading up to it. It
his
is
justifications
so well done.
For it, you completely understand.
Yes.
Her being furious about it, you imagine.
Her
kind of knowing.
Choosing to buy it maybe, yeah.
The fact that they don't expand on any of that though and let it sit there with the really great job of acting that both of those people have done is super good.
Yes.
And we and like
a mature video game in a lot of ways.
The intro,
that zombie shooting game.
The intro is so good. Not enough dogs coming back to help you for my life. The intro being great in spite of the fact that it is something that we talk about all being frustrated by in video games, the enforced slow walk segment.
Yeah,
like, sure.
Yeah.
To make one of them be still like good and enjoyable and investing in rather than feeling like a pain in the ass where you're going, just get me in there and let me do something.
I mean, the reason it's a technique at all is because it forces you to absorb your surroundings and, like become invested and attached to what's going on. Mm. And it's just the best execution of it, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
All right.
Yeah, you go then.
I'm going to go. This is my last one. All of my others have been, kind of, specific moments that are memorable for all these different reasons. This one is memorable just because it's pure fun. Mm. The building collapse in Uncharted 2.
Great.
Which, everything else on my list kind of signified something to me. This was just like, it's just one of my, it's one of, if not the first things that comes to my mind when I think of memorable moments just because it's like, pure fun.
Sure.
Like just sitting there going, I can't fucking believe that this is that I'm playing something like this.
Totally.
Where you're up the top of a building, it gets, what does it get hit by? A helicopter?
You shoot down a helicopter, I think. Or there's definitely like a sort of ATV tank thing after you as well.
So that something crashes into the building or whatever causes APV? It to start collapsing and then you're like, the building is crumbling, you're sliding down these floors as they're being destroyed and you're getting closer and closer to the ground and like still having to like shoot people who are shooting at you as you're sliding all over the place. And for just sheer thrill and something happening on that scale. And again, just feeling like this medium of video games doing something where it's like, imagine myself being 10 and playing a Super Nintendo and knowing that this is what gaming would one day be like.
Yeah, you could snap your Goof Troop cartridge in half.
Let's not go crazy here. just one of the most just fun and awe-inspiring moments in a video game I think I've ever played.
We always compare Uncharted to Indiana Jones, and that is a perfect example of feeling like you are Indiana Jones. It just nails it.
But it's almost like for something to be so cinematic and still be playing as a game, you almost feel like this shouldn't be working. Like it sort of should be one or the other, where it's like a building is collapsing and that's just, you're just watching that happen. Mm. Like you're not, you know what I mean? Like it's the tech behind that just seemed so crazy to me at the time of like, how is there still room for me to be influencing what's going on in the environment around me? Like how is the console not just shitting itself? but yeah, pure fun.
Had the, a lot of people say the train sequence from Uncharted 2 is like, I had the plane one from Uncharted 3.
Yeah.
The whole thing from when you're sneaking into the thing, the bit from where you race after it and then...
You drive up into the back, don't you?
Yeah. Elaine? It's not Elaine.
Eleanor.
Is it Eleanor?
who he marries?
Elena. I guess it's a combination of what we both said. I think it's Elena. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she drives up and you get the car up and then you go up on the wheel and it takes off. And again, it looks fucking incredible.
Yeah.
You get into the fist fight on the plane, super Indiana Jones style because he's a big dude. All the stuff gets knocked out. The plane blows up. You end up in the desert. That whole sequence is, Marone.
Yeah. Even the wandering around the desert stuff is done well because it's very cinematic. Yeah.
People should give 3 more credit than it gets, I reckon.
I agree. I think that's the one I want to play again the most.
Yeah.
Let's quickly shout out something that happened by the time people hear this weeks ago, but someone posted in our Facebook group a video of Nolan North discussing our absolute favorite line from the Uncharted series that comes up on the show a bit.
From all video games.
Yeah. It's Sully saying, "Oh, I'm sweating like a whore in church," which we're obsessed with because of how bad it is.
Yes.
And so there's an interview with Nolan North where it's like, it's one of the most, just because of its personal, it's because of its attachment to us, one of the weirdest things I've ever watched where it's like, they go to him, "What's your favorite moment in the Uncharted games?" And he goes, "Well, you know, there's a bit with Sully," and I'd start to realize this is why this person has posted this in our group.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. And he tells this story about the voice actor.
He was supposed to just say, you know, "I'm hot."
Yeah. And, well, supposed to say, "Me, I respect women."
But old Gregory Rushenfield, he decided to ad-lib on the day. And yeah, fucking
just
hell.
This four-minute discussion about this line is... And Nolan's loving it. He's like, he's kind of making himself laugh just retelling it. It's like, "Oh, Nolan, put the brakes on this one."
Yeah.
Great stuff.
The polite laughter when he's like... And he said, "I'm sweating like a whore in church."
And the interview is like,
a perfect moment.
And then I go, what were you doing bringing a hooker to church? It's like, well, now you've used two unwoke terms.
Yeah. No, he says hooker the first time as well. It cleans it up a little bit.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You are right. Yeah.
Do you want to, Ben, do you want to run through your honorable mentions?
I've still got one more actual
one. Yeah, you haven't done number 5
before you do the actual one, though, I mean. Before you crown the number one, you go through the honorable mentions.
I mean,
I haven't said honorable correctly once.
That is very dishonorable.
Ah.
Mine were also in no particular order.
Right.
Right. I've got a couple.
A voice saying the Big Apple isn't what I consider to be the number 2 best moment in any video game ever.
Oh, okay. I mean, you know, from you, it kind of made sense.
One.
We've talked about this, I believe, on the best music in video games.
It sounded
episode.
Like you were going to tell us off. We've talked about this.
Red Dead Redemption, Mexico, Jose Gonzalez.
Yep.
Just, we've talked about it. One of the best games in, one of the best moments in games.
Yep.
Pretty much everyone agrees with that. And a moment that I suspect appeared at the top of a lot of lists you guys would have seen in researching this, Aerith dying in Final Fantasy VII.
Hate Aerith.
Yeah, me too.
It's Aeris.
Yeah.
But
except it's not. Aeris is a mistranslation.
Don't care.
Yeah, it's always been Aeris to me. That's how it was when I played it.
Yeah.
And it sounds right.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, those are the other two. We talked about the Last of Us ones. So, yeah, that's all my honorables. Do you want me to do my actual last one?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
God, yes.
This is a purely personal one. It is the moment that I beat a very specific boss in Final Fantasy VII.
Right.
It's a very hard boss.
Which one?
It's Materia Keeper. It is up in the mountains in Nibelheim, and I had not prepared properly for it. It's like weak to poison and like stop magic, and I hadn't leveled them up. So basically, I was fucked. Like, I couldn't go back. I couldn't go forward.
Right.
I just had to try and beat this boss.
Is it a dragon looking thing?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I got fucking stuck on that the first time I played it.
Yeah, it's big, big black dragon.
Yeah. Is that like a bottleneck for a lot of people,
yes,
I guess?
Yes, right. Exactly. That's exactly it. And yeah, like you to go, I literally think you can't go backwards.
Like I remember, thinking like, oh, my save is here. It's the only one I have. I have to do this.
Yeah.
And I think the first time I played it, I did not.
Yeah, right. So I think I had to grind. You can run around the same area fighting hard enemies.
I fucking remember doing this exact shit. There's like a rope bridge.
Yes.
And you're running back and forth on the rope bridge between two mountain peaks.
And I think there's like little pipes you can slide up and down, and it's all annoying.
Yeah.
And it's all hard already. And to use that to grind, to get better, to beat a boss was fucking infuriating. Would have taken me weeks.
Right.
In real time.
Yeah.
And the moment that I beat it, and when you beat bosses in Final Fantasy VII, they turn red, they slowly fade away, they make this very satisfying like,
yeah, it's like emptying a sink.
And I've never been more satisfied in video games and more proud of myself. And
yeah,
I will never forget
that feeling of something you've been trying for ages to beat, where you've reached the point where you're like, this is just never going to happen for me. This is the end of the game for me.
It's like fucking whacking it when you're on coke.
Oh, fuck. Something's turned up. Oh, you're right. It is cold.
So, like, all of that.
Great ad lib. Just like the great man.
Boys, that was a perfect moment. Someone's going to be posting this in some other Facebook group in 20 years.
Who cares what your number one moment is? Let's wrap up the
That's a good one for satisfaction. Yeah.
Because it was also a game that I was loving, and I was like, I want to keep playing. I want to keep going through the story. That satisfaction, is like, I don't know, and being young, you know, it's just, it's the best you feel.
Those sorts of accomplishments when you're that age too, and it's like, you know, video games are allowed to be pretty much your whole world, and your entire source of satisfaction is allowed to be from them.
Totally.
It was just like, so good.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I? The reason I got you to read out some honorable mentions is because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Sneaky. I won't expand on them much, but fighting the original character from the first Pokemon games in the second ones, and like there's a whole other region, and you go back through the whole first game again, was really fucking cool.
Yeah.
The demo they showed of Half-Life 2 seemed impossible, and it was all like incredible looking, and the first time I'd seen physics properly in a game.
Yeah, that was a huge one for physics. What was it called? The gun?
The gravity gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, seeing all of that stuff was like, it looked so futuristic, and I remember being obsessed with watching that like 20-minute demo several times, and then that version of it kind of didn't come out, but whatever.
Yeah.
Being lost in The Witcher 3 in general, just the environment in that game is probably the best one that's been made. Yeah. A game called Bible Blaster that my Christian friend had, and I remember it being really fun, and I've never seen it again. I'm not sure if it was called Bible Blaster.
No, that sounds right.
First time playing online multiplayer stuff with like Counter-Strike and also doing like Halo in big groups. But my actual like biggest thing is
your most memorable moment.
Figuring out about emulation and piracy.
Okay.
Wow.
For a couple reasons. Obviously,
because you're a bad boy.
Being young, not having sort of some morals to it and going like, oh shit, I can get anything here.
Yeah.
But also, specifically with emulation and ROMs and all of that, it kind of demystifying video games in a really cool way.
Yep, I agree.
Using that to kind of figure out like, oh, fuck, this is how these are made. This is how you can break them. This is what people have done to like fuck with Mario and make it, you know, he's got a butt or whatever, you know. Just
that classic mod.
And mods as well, I guess, are the same thing.
Yeah.
Like all of that stuff in like sort of around the early 2000s, fucking around with that.
But that it taps into that similar thing of like I was saying, it's come up a bunch of times of like breaking, like especially being a lot younger and like breaking out of the confines of like what you think, you know, are the bounds of games up until that point. Like finding a ROM site and an emulator and realizing I have every game now.
Yeah.
Like I just can get, I can have every single game that's ever existed.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff used to like thrill me so much. Yeah. The idea of like, even just if I bought a DVD going like, I have this and I can watch it whenever I want.
Sure.
Like with such a great feeling, and then multiplying that by like, oh, thousands.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely that era for me of getting like a CD burner for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And realizing like, oh, fuck, this opens up a huge world for me. Like, genuinely,
Blink 182 Megamix.
But like, oh, what's a VCD? Oh, I can put a movie on a... Like, yeah, yeah. That whole sort of era for
the
us
best.
Around the same time would have been, I guess.
Yeah.
Of like technology, mods, hacking, ROMs, all of that stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, expanding your understanding of what gaming was is...
100%. Yeah. Like, yeah. And that, and then starting to get into the... ideas of design behind it and getting actually really interested in it. Same as happens with movies when you realize like, oh, that's a camera.
Mm.
And, you know, all of it, that second level kind of interest in video games. I remember getting really into that, going to weird forums in the early 2000s,
yeah.
playing all these fucking ROMs and shit.
And little did we know that, you know, our interest in piracy back in the day would ultimately lead to the decimation of an industry that we would all end up working in one day.
Yeah. The music industry.
Yes. Yes. We're all
fucking
in Metallica.
Napster.
All right, boys. Good lists.
Great lists.
We
good
did
times.
It.
Good 150.
Mm. And yeah, thanks everyone who's who listens to this every week, whether it's, you know, whether you're a recent addition to the filth or whether you've been here from day one.
Yes.
It's always great interacting with you guys. It's always great getting the feedback each week. Yeah. We'll see you in another 150.
I wanna shout out, just because I remember, Russell Redmond.
Oh, yeah.
The first person I ever remember commenting on any of our social media posts.
Interesting.
And has stayed a listener, and I've seen, you know, still posting 3 years later. So thanks,
yeah.
Russell.
Ariana Grande would be the first one I remember.
Oh, yeah.
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 Shigeru Miyamoto. Nothing to do with it, just shouts out creating Mario. Mm. Good stuff, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah.
You well did done. It, brother, and we're all proud of you. filthycasuals.com.au for our Patreon, our premium Bandcamp episodes, links to the socials, all stuff like that.
Mm.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next time, and as we say here at the end of every one of these...
That was the final episode of this podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.